Anyway, guys, I guess I get the honor of doing this because I have a family connection a little bit. My wife is a Bajnon, for those who are familiar with Rabbi Bajnon from Yeshiva Katana. And my sister-in-law is Yocheved Scheinberg. She is the niece to Rabbi Chaim Pinchas Scheinberg. And for about 20 years or so, when Rabbi Scheinberg used to come into the United States, usually between Purim and Lag BaOmer for fundraising for his yeshiva, he stayed in my brother-in-law's basement. He had a nice finished set of rooms downstairs in the basement. And Rav Scheinberg was a regular guest there, so my sister-in-law got very close to her uncle. I mean, she cared for him and cooked for him and the like for a good 20 years or more. And obviously privy to their personal lives a little bit because she had a close family connection and lived in the house for 2 months every year. Anyway, I think the thing that has to be emphasized about Rav Scheinberg is that he was very much a pioneer in many, many ways. First and foremost, I think it should be emphasized that considering he was, I think, about 101 that he passed away, was one of the last remnants of that whole generation of yeshiva students that studied in Europe between the First and Second World War. Those are the glory days of the Mir and Slobodka, and the storied names, but very few people left who studied that particular time. He was a Talmud of the Mir, but I want to go back before that, because what really makes Rav Scheinberg unique is the fact that he's American-born. He's one of the few really Torah giants of the 20th century who was born here in the United States. And he grew up on the Lower East Side. My father, Olav Hashon, was from the same generation. And you have to understand, guys, that the face of American Orthodoxy in the United States before the Second World War was so different than it is now, it's really almost hard to believe. There was a joke that when they used to say, it's a sad joke, that when immigrants came to America by boat in the 19 teens and 20s, when they got into upper New York Harbor and they saw the Statue of Liberty, they took their talisim and tefillin and chucked them overboard. Now, I don't think that that is to be taken literally as true, but the point is that my father's generation, the children born of that huge wave of Russian immigrants, were in a tremendous rush to Americanize, to assimilate, and to make it in America, to make it in America. And the vast majority of the Jews in this country are the descendants of the children, the immigrants who came here a century ago and their children. And all of us know, and if you don't know, you should be aware of the fact that the assimilation, the intermarriage rate that exists in America is astounding. Everyone went, essentially, with few exceptions, to public school. Public schools were clean, they were safe, and most important, they were free. And for immigrants who were literally eking out a living on the Lower East Side, working in the needle trades, it was awfully rough to pay a yeshiva tuition. Kids went to Talmud Torah after school, but the vast majority of the children of that immigrant generation were assimilated, and as I said, their goal was to be Americanized, to get to college, to get to university, and as far as the Yiddishkeit goes, it went by the wayside. So what makes the Scheinbergs unique is that they bucked that trend. That Rabbi Scheinberg's parents, fearing that he would get caught up in this assimilationist, become Americanized, make big bucks in America mentality, at age 14 or 13, sent him alone off to Europe to study the Mir Yeshiva. Now, we're talking about a 13-year-old being sent before the advent of plane travel and jet travel by boat halfway around the world. The Mesiras Nefesh was astounding. So, and Rav Scheinberg always said that he owes whatever he has first and foremost to the enormous sacrifices that his parents made. They said they bucked the establishment in doing that particular thing. Of course, he started with was a brilliant person, but he always claimed that his accomplishments were more through sweat and effort, and his hasmada was astounding. He was an enormous masmid. And He was in the Mir Yeshiva during the years that Rabbi Ruchem Lubavitch was the Mashgiach. Rabbi Ruchem passed away. Rabbi Chaska Levinstein was the Mashgiach, who eventually ended up in Ponovitch. He had a very close connection with those two Mashgiachim. And he himself, the years that he was the Rosh Yeshiva in Torah Or, and I remember that time when I went to Israel after high school back in 1971, he was not just the Rosh Yeshiva, he was the Mashgiach also. I mean, the best shmooze given in Torah Or was the Rosh Yeshiva shmooze. Because he was a Talmud of some of the great Bali Musar of that particular era. He didn't end up going to Shanghai with the yeshiva, because as an American, he was able, just when the war broke out, he was able, as an American, using his passport, to come back here to the United States, to get back to the United States. He had gotten married to an American woman, for those who ever saw the book All for the Boss, Rabbi Yaakov Yosef Herman, who also was called the Chafetz Chaim of the United States. Again, someone who bucked the trend and remained on the Lower East Side, committed to Yiddishkeit. He married one of his daughters, and they went back to Europe. Again, for an American guy to learn in Kolel was an unheard of phenomenon in the United States at that particular time. But he went, he had children there, some of his children were born in Europe, and he came back to the United States when the Second World War broke out. His first official position, I guess this gets lost to some extent because of his years in Torah Or, he was 25 years the Mashgiach of Chofetz Chaim, which was in Forest Hills for many years. Now I believe they're in Kew Gardens Hills. He was the Mashgiach Ruchni B'Yeshiva, and it was during that time that he wrote his Svarim on the Ksos HaChoshen and the Nesivos. He wrote a complete sefer on the Avnei Miluim, and also on the Sheiv Shmeitzer. They're probably not as popular as they should be, but they are multi-volume works, and they're classics. They're really classics. So during his years as Mashgiach, he really put in his kochos and published any number of important svarim. His Talmid, of course, dying at 101, many of his Talmidim passed away before him, but I grew up in a little town of Mount Vernon, New York, just north of the Bronx, and Rabbi Joseph Chait, Zechut Sadat Livrach, Rabbi Yochanan Chait, of the famous Chait family, one of the three older brothers, was a Talmud of his, and always spoke about his Hasmada, always spoke about his enormous devotion to his Talmidim, his concern not just for their learning, but, you know, for their personal lives, getting married and giving them marriage advice and guidance as far as, you know, professional positions and the like. He had a tremendous concern for their personal, you know, for their personal lives. And again, even right after the war, bear in mind, guys, that yeshiva education in America was much, much more limited. Day schools were limited, yeshiva high schools were limited. Learning post-high school in yeshiva was not the in thing to do back in 1946 and 1948 and 1950, during the years he was there. Anyway, when Rav David Leibowitz passed away, the Rosh Yeshiva of Chofetz Chaim, Rav Sharmerig decided to take off on his own, and he founded in Bensonhurst, I think in Brooklyn, a small yeshiva called Torah Or. And again, in this idea of kind of bucking the trend, in about 1964 and 1965, before the Six-Day War, before Nefesh B'Nefesh, before it was popular, he decided to pick up with his family and his Talmidim and to make Aliyah. So he moved to Eretz Israel back in the early, I think it was 63 or 64, he moved to Israel, and he took his yeshiva along with him. He took Torah Or and founded it, and eventually established the yeshiva in Mattersdorf in Yerushalayim, where it is today. In addition to his Rosh Yeshiva responsibilities, he was the Dayan, he was the Mora Hora, he was the Posek for the Mattersdorf community. And there was a following, and I would say he was not just a pioneer for himself, but many of his Talmidim eventually settled in Israel, and again, before it was popular to move there, you had a what should we call it? A Moshav Amerikai, had an American neighborhood in Yerushalayim, even in the days before the Six-Day War. Mattersdorf grew, the yeshiva grew, but he always kept strong ties with his former Talmidim here in the United States. And as I mentioned from family experience, Rav Sharmerig traveled back and forth regularly, primarily for fundraising purposes, for a good 25 years until simply by virtue of old age it was able to do so. I think what people who had dealings with him will tell you is, despite the talesim and the tzitzis, which can kind of put you off at first, he was a very, very normal person. Americans like to go to speak with him for advice, for aids, for sakalacha. First of all, he spoke English. And, you know, since until recently, most big poskim in Israel spoke primarily Yiddish, you had to go with a translator. Rav Scheinberg, you'd go, meet with him, spoke in English, and because he was raised in America, raised on the rough and tough streets of the Lower East Side, I understand, by the way, he was a very proficient ball player in his early days. And people could still speak. There was a period where, if you can get him, sorry, privately, he would still ask questions about how the Yankees were doing and how the, you know, how the ball scores were. I don't think it was a main occupation of his, but you know, he used to ask Tommy the occasion what's going on in the States with the ball games. He played a pretty big. His brother, who was my Rebbe in high school, said that my brother was, until he got real serious in learning, he was a pretty good ball player. He spoke English. He was eminently normal. He was eminently down to earth. And Americans gravitated to him because he understood the American psyche, the American mindset, and was able to deal with American issues and American problems. That's kind of what made him very unique. The Hasmada remained constant. Rav Scheinberg davened Vasikin every morning himself in the apartment privately, and I had occasion to daven there, you know, as a bocher after high school. He would come to yeshiva in the morning for shacharis, in time for Baruch Hu, and then take over the Amud most days to daven from Chazor HaShatz on. He wanted to daven Chazor HaShatz for the Amud. As I said, the Hasmona remained tremendous until physically was unable to do so. As I said, my main emphasis is the pioneering. At a time when Torah learning did not exist in America, his parents made an Odom Godel out of him. At a time that moving to Eretz Israel was not popular, in fact, demanded a great deal of financial sacrifice. It was tough. It was tough living. There's a book that's around. You guys can see it. They reprinted it called All for the Boss. I think they have a copy of it in the basement downstairs. Read the chapters by his sister-in-law, Ruchama Shein, about the circumstances about arriving and building the Mattersdorf neighborhood back in the early 60s. Materially, they went without a great deal. But he was eminently successful, as I said, by virtue of his tremendous hasmada, his being, as I said, a Talmud of the great Musa giants of the interwar period between World War I and World War II, his being down to earth, his being an American, and what should I say, a tremendous amount of Siyata Deshmaya. He lived to see, I understand, great-grandchildren married. He lived to chassidus of great-grandchildren. And because of my sister-in-law's close connection with him, many of my nieces and nephews, the Bajnon's children, he would come into the United States. They flew him, and he was with Masada Kedushin. He kept a very close tie, in fact, with his family, very close family ties. One of his daughters was married to Rav Nissen Albert, who was the Rav here till he passed away, the Agud in Far Rockaway. Another daughter was married to, now the names, Rabbi Leibowitz, are going to slip me. Another daughter was married to one of the Mashgichim in Chafetz Chaim, Rav David Wiener. There was a daughter married to, all right, who's the Machaber, the Chedushei Basra, the son-in-law who was in Torah or with him? I'm trying to think of the name, it's slipping my mind. One of his son-in-laws was a Rosh Hashiva along with him. He had mostly daughters, a son, Simcha, who was kind of like the executive director of the yeshiva, but as I said, kept close ties with his children, many of whom were here in the United States. There was a daughter married a businessman, Rosengarten. He had very close sense of mishpacha, very close sense of family. And my Rebbe in high school, who was eventually my shachar of Shmuel Scheinberg, was very close to the family, amongst the siblings. And interestingly enough, he was the eldest of five children. He outlived all of his siblings. But as I said, he was an Odom Godol, and who bucked the trend in so many ways. And the only person of that stature I know who was born and bred originally right here in the United States.